Hey everyone, welcome to this week's Going in Circles Big Monday show. My name is Charles Simon, I'm the host, and my partner, Bear Spears, be with us just a minute. It's a short show tonight because we have things to do. Anyways, we'll talk about, you know, the usual stuff we talk about, and we'll see you in a little bit.
Hello, Bear Spears Jr.
Hello, Charles Simon, host.
Okay, get on the host train. We had the horse racing. Twitter was a little bit out there today.
It was weird.
Had an argument about the merits of sex workers on social media.
Yeah, I didn't have that on my bingo card, but it was interesting. Say the least, I learned some things for sure.
Here at the Going in Circles podcast, we are a
equal opportunity network.
We're a non-judgmental.
Yeah, that too.
Group here, so we're willing to listen to both sides of the argument. It wasn't exactly what I was thinking that we'd be looking at today, but you know,
It was cold in Florida, so I guess all bets were off.
It was cold here. It was supposed to snow last night, and naturally, the news, you know, the weather people like freaked out like it was going to be Armageddon or something. And as it turns out, we got about a half an inch, and it melted by
like, gone.
By yeah, like 10 o'clock. So.
See here, yesterday, Sunday, was 80+ degrees. Today, 60-something. And we had a thunderstorm last night, which was crazy because typically don't get that unless it's like ridiculously humid. And there was thunder and lightning. That was really strange. Yeah, I mean, we get rain, but we usually don't get thunderstorms like this time of year.
Right.
So I guess the whole world is upside down since, you know, Kadarius Toney can't stay onside.
Yeah, that was wild, really.
And that was a great play, too. I mean, I got to give it up to Kelce. That was like the best play in NFL history.
People seriously have no idea how much ball you have to have to make that play at that point in the game. Because, I mean, essentially, a field goal tied it up. And where he caught the ball, their kicker hasn't missed a kick like the entire year. So, I mean, at the very least, they were going to come out of there with a tie, and to just turn around and throw it
to the culprit, no less.
Yeah,
who to the guy that messed up the whole play.
And, you know, it was just he was so far off too. It wasn't like it was a
right. It wasn't even close. There wasn't even.
I was watching. I mean, it's funny because people talk about like you know stewards and how terrible they are, and comparing them to sports, it's 1,000 times harder to officiate a football game than it is to be a steward.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many moving parts in a football game, pre-snap, during the play, everything. There's so much going on.
No, there's so many technicalities in it. I mean, just pass interference and holding alone.
There's so many interpretations, bro.
But I was watching the early game here. We had two games, and I didn't feel the need to go watch the early games because you know it was a pretty weak schedule. But we had the Jets and the Texans, ooh, which was a 0-0 affair at halftime, and we had the other game was actually pretty good. It was the Rams and Baltimore, the Ravens. And there was more holds, like guys grabbing a jersey hold. Not like, you know, the technical. It's tough sometimes. They show a replay and you don't really see the hold. But, and you know, when the announcers kind of go silent and like, well, yeah. But there were so many holds not called. The Ravens' last drive, there was at least two times where I saw Ram guys, the guys on the Ravens, the linemen, absolutely grabbed the guy's shirt and just and they didn't call him. They didn't call a single one of them.
But well, were they consistent? That's the key. Like, if they didn't call it all game and they didn't call it then, I get it.
But, I mean, you could see that they call, if they did call one, it would have been hard to say, well, geez, that's not holding, because it was. But, I mean, this guy was so far on the line. I mean, and if
he was almost on the other, he was almost literally on the defensive side.
And you know, like watching the video or the picture, he's looking towards the ball because
right. How did he not know?
That's what I mean. Like,
he was so far.
I get that. You know, I kind of get where Mahomes is coming off and saying, "Listen, man, this is not a call that's ever made." But the fact of the matter was, like, it's hard to argue that it wasn't actually a penalty. And it's just, he was so far all over. It was
too obvious not to call. I think I said that to somebody yesterday.
Right.
It was just way too obvious for them to, you couldn't let that go. Because if they don't call it, then what happens? You know what I mean? People will be up in arms the other way, even worse.
Yes. Everybody's saying, look, the guy was lined up offsides, how could they have not called it?
Right.
But it's a difficult sport to I mean, basketball is the same. It's a difficult sport to ref, because everybody is so fast and everybody moves so quick, and you know, you remember the refs are getting their own vantage point. They're not getting the same view that we get. We get the TV view, which obviously allows for a lot wider view. They're on the court, and you know, wherever they are. And basketball players and football players are really big human beings. So a lot of times, you know, there's a guy standing in their way, they can't see. But anyways, there was...
That's why I used to stay out on the perimeter, bro.
Yeah, too much.
You go inside there with the trees, you're bound to get hurt, get smacked around, and nobody calls nothing.
No. But there was a – it was pointed out by David Argona about a takedown yesterday.
Oh, man. Don't even Laurel. Get me started with Laurel.
I tell you. There's a bunch of bad steward stands, and I don't care if people don't like it. It's the truth, man. It's the truth. And there might be excuses why, but they're just not very good. And that's one of the arguments I have against changing the rules. Oh, Category 1, Category 2. You know what the category for the Maryland stewards is? The category I. Incompetent. There have been more bizarrely disgracefully bad stewards calls in Laurel than anywhere. I mean, listen, the guys in New Jersey, pretty shaky. The guys in New York, they make a lot of mistakes. The guys in California, they're not very good. The guys in Florida are actually okay. Though it was a little wild on Saturday that the bug boy, who like completely panicked because he was running up the heels of the horse in front of him, like ducked out and then caused Eddie Perez to like...
Oh, yeah, to fall off, yeah.
I don't know how he survived that, let alone got up and rode.
Yeah, and people were like, oh, he jumped off.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah, he jumped off. Yeah. Backwards. But, you can't see the replay now because they cut it out, but it certainly looked like his horse was the one who caused the other horse to duck. You know, they don't have to make contact. That is something you hear a lot of times. People say, oh, well, the horse didn't make contact. It has nothing to do with contact. You can intimidate someone without making contact. I mean, if you came out six pass, your jockey shouldn't have to clip heels in order to get the, you know, taken down. But, right.
I mean, how many times have we seen that happen? I got put up one time at a couple of times, actually, at Tampa. It was the same thing. Horses drifted out and kept drifting out. My horse couldn't get by. And they reversed the decision. But, you know, I don't know what their mindset is going into these things. I wish I knew, or I wish I could hear what they talk about while they're deliberating.
I think you probably don't. You probably don't, because you would freak the fuck out, man.
Yeah, because you know Laurel's famous for the Phantom DQ from last year, right? That was last year, wasn't it?
I think it was last spring.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was the seventh race on Friday. It was just nothing happened, and there was slight interference, supposedly, and it didn't really have anything to do with anything. And
no impact.
It just is, and you know, my problem again is the category isn't the problem. The problem is the people that are administering the rules. They're the ones that are just not doing a good job. I mean, again, do we have to stump for this? And Heise screws up everything pretty much it touches. So you wouldn't expect that they would do it better. But there should be a plan to nationalize the rules of, you know, on the racetrack. There's no reason not to. It's just moronic not to have it. And honestly, it's a lot simpler than messing with medication rules or drug rules, which are a giant pain in the ass, because there's, you know, like 6,000 medications, known medications out there. I mean,
right. Get the low hanging fruit, make it look good.
It would be, but for some reason, you know, we just don't, that's not important to anyone, which it just makes it nuts. But, you know, I said announced today they're going to give pro bono help for anybody that they've roped into
a lawsuit.
And people just immediately just ran, like they sprinted over to pat him on the back. Well, if they put in realistic rules for horse racing regulation, not for, you know, rules that are really more suited for criminal conduct, then perhaps trainers wouldn't need this, you know, take second mortgages on their house to defend themselves over some nonsense. But, you know, that's just how it goes in this business, man. Some people, they just don't want to see anything negative about an idea they like. And it doesn't matter how many problems the person has, it doesn't matter how many issues that an organization has, they just keep saying, oh, it's awesome, it's awesome, it's awesome, it's awesome, it's awesome. And
how? I mean, I don't know how they can justify that.
I just don't know why people can't just admit that there are problems and say, hey, you know, we need to fix these problems and we need to stop having so many problems, as opposed to just always, you know, you did it. Things used to be worse. And,
well, isn't it like the AA thing, the first step is to admit you have a problem, and I don't think we've gotten there yet.
Yeah, and there's 12 steps, man. We can't even get to number one.
Right, we're not even at number one.
I think I might hold the Guinness Book of Records for most AA meetings attended for a person that does not have
a problem. Well, you're a support
person. It doesn't even like really drink hardly, because, you know, I just don't.
You've been to AA meetings and see what it does, you know.
I'm telling you, man.
That's some all you have to do is sit some in of the one greatest, and you're like, yeah, I
some
don't
of the greatest stories ever I heard were AA meetings in New Orleans. Oh my god.
Mm.
And I know technically, you know, it's illegal to, not illegal, but you know what I mean. You're not supposed to be in there unless you belong in there. But I had a perfectly good reason, and a lot of times I had to do with parking. But
good lord!
It's a good point though you make. Though, I mean, when are we going to hit rock bottom? I mean, last week essentially, the industry is the Titanic. We've hit icebergs already.
A few of them.
We're a sinking ship, right? This ship is sinking, no matter what anyone tells you. The ship is against us. The ship wants to sink in some cases. Some of our ships, they want to go down. And we have the CAW guys The CAW band is playing their tunes on the deck and telling us how, you know, you need us. We're better for you. You know, like, like what?
I don't understand it. And I think a lot of it is the people, like the public, quote unquote, the general public, they really don't understand the issues and they just spout off.
I don't think they want to, though. I mean, I think a lot of people, this is one of the things I found with horse racing, with owners, with big owners, not always big owners, but owners in general. And a lot of them use horse racing as an escape from the regular world, and they don't want to deal with a whole bunch of issues in horse racing. They want to own their horses. They want to go to the races. They want to have fun. They want to win races. But they don't want to get involved with the day-to-day bullshit of racing. And I can't blame a lot of people. I mean, listen, I was asked to run for HEPAs a lot of times, and I always was like, I'm not getting involved in that field. I mean, it just seemed like it was – I just didn't feel like it was something that I wanted to do. And I wound up getting roped into doing it. And honestly, I learned a lot being on the board. And seeing some of the huge dysfunction that exists in horsemen's organizations, which, I mean, I thought were dysfunctional for the most part before that, but
you really saw it in up close and personal.
I think the one thing, and I've tried to say, express this is not an insult to the horsemen. It's just that the groups that they have that represent them are they live in the past. These were set up for the 1990 horse racing, before ADWs, before full card simulcasting, before CAWs, before host market fees, before all this other stuff that's come on. And the representation that we have is just not capable in a lot of ways of doing things. And, you know, making mistakes is making mistakes, but the tracks lead the way all the time. The horsemen follow because they usually don't get a retort. The track says, this is why you should do it. It'll be good for this, 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 and this. Well, what are the downsides? Well, you know, downsides, there aren't really no downsides. Well, there's no third party to bring in to say, hold on, you know.
Yeah, pump the brakes. Let's look at this a little further.
You go ahead and do this. And that's a problem. But that's just the way things are set up. I told this story many times. Back in the early 2000s, when UBET was bought by Churchill, turned into Twin Spires, and they started funneling off customers, live customers. And we, you know, the horsemen in Kentucky were always pretty proactive. And we said, hey, this is not good for us. They're signing people up. They're telling them to make bets on their phones, which at the time was not legal. Huh. But not make a bet at a phone on your phone at a racetrack in Kentucky. And they were signing people up in the lobby as you came in and telling them they can make bets on their phone. And we were smart enough at that point to say, hey,
hold up.
Those people go here and make a bet. We get 7%, and if they make a bet on the phone, we get like 4% at the time or 5% at the time. So we're going to lose money if they do this. And who makes more money? The track makes more money. We make less money. You know, the same amount of handle is going to create less money for purses and more money for the tracks. So we kind of balked at it. And I remember being in a meeting, and there was a lot of people there. Man, it was as close as I can remember to being involved in anything where people might have a boycott of some sort. And of course, jeez, you know, the track came and said, "Oh well, you know, we'll give you a bigger cut of this, and we'll do this, and blah blah blah," and everything was avoided. But it always stuck in the back of my mind that percentage that we always assumed. When I went to the University of Arizona, we kind of operated on a 7-7-7 split of a 20-21% takeout. Or, you know, 18%, 6-6-6.
Right.
It was six at a track, six at a horseman, and six to the state. A lot of times the state was breed funds or this or that, you know. That was kind of the general, you know, gist was we would get 6-7%, 8% in some cases. Well, now I think overall horsemen are probably getting less than 3% dollar bet.
How'd they get that deal?
Well, it's money that, like, you know, CAW money comes at a cost. I would almost guarantee you most horsemen's groups don't have any idea of how much money is being bet through CAWs.
They can't, because if they did and they realized the tilt a certain way, they would object immediately.
Yeah, you know, I don't even know that, though. I'm not sure that a lot of organizations are savvy enough to really get it, understand where handle is coming from. They're just always told things.
Well, that's the thing, is why hasn't anyone just questioned that?
Because
from the horseman side, I mean.
Just not set up properly.
Even the representatives wouldn't be savvy enough to do that?
No.
I mean, a lot of those people listen to the show.
No. Nope. I mean, listen, not to take shots, but I'm taking shots. In California, you have a situation where you have two organizations. It's such a mess out there. And Bill Nader, who works for the TOC, I mean, he sounds a lot of times like he's still working for a track. I understand, you know, you got to be diplomatic, and it's a tough situation because you're in a place that has, you know, everything's diminishing there. The number of owners is diminishing, number of horses is diminishing, the northern part of California is diminishing, handle is not strong. Purses are getting cut, right. So you can't come out and just be, you know, like wild people like we can. But I just feel like I had a long conversation the other day, almost an hour, with someone who gets it, who's has his own opinions, and I don't agree with all of them, but I agree with most of them. And you know, the same thing that you look at from this angle of, they keep wanting to appease everyone. They keep wanting to tell everyone, it's not really that bad. It's going to be okay. And it's not. It's not going to be okay. It's going to suck, and more tracks are going to close, and there's just no way around it. The current path is the path to destruction.
Destruction. Doom. And it's really clear. I mean, I say it's not rocket science to look at how things are going. I mean, there's still that feeling, you know, that overall feeling that things aren't right. And to me, it really isn't that difficult of a thing to understand or see, but apparently it is.
I was at the harness track today in Saratoga, and if there was 40, 50 people there, there was a lot. And the handle was pretty anemic. And it was.
Yeah, so much so there was a 2 out of 3 and a
two out of three pick three. Yeah, a pick three. Which I believe is a dollar or 50 cent pick three.
I think it's 50 cents there.
But I mean, that's pretty hard to do.
Hell yeah, it's hard to do.
But I said to my friend, you know, like, if you wanted to lobby against horse racing continuing to be funded by the casinos, all you would have to do is bring someone here today and sit them down and look around and say, look around. What are we doing here? What are we playing this for? Why are we having this? Why are we doing this? You know?
Right. And nobody could say anything otherwise, because it is what it is. On a Monday or Tuesday, I mean, like you said, 30 people in the joint.
The only argument we could come up with was all those people on the backside would be released into society, and it might be cheaper to like to keep them in, you know,
keep them corralled,
keep them corralled instead of having to institutionalize all of them. Think about the size of that. You've been there. Think about the size of the racetrack itself and the backside, and what that property valuation would be.
It's big money, dude. I mean, look at what they sold Calder for.
Yeah. Saratoga land values aren't quite as big as Calder, but
it can't be far off.
It's pretty, you know, it's a whole lot more than the 250,000 or whatever they handled today.
Damn, they handled that much? Well, they had 14 races. I thought it was less. I didn't look, but
you got 14 races. It's just they're 13 races. But it's not a very good product, and it just, you know, we're watching parks and it's the same thing. We look up to the 2 to 5 shot of parks. And really what simulcasting did at full card simulcasting, what it did was it really destroyed a lot of the smaller tracks communities. And that there used to be a lot of people that bet Saratoga Harness, that bet Philadelphia Park or Keystone or whatever it was back then, because that was their local track. And that was what was in the newspapers. And that was the only place they could bet. They couldn't bet races from California. So they were in tune to their local racing, and they were focused on the local racing. And, you know, full card simulcasting has really kind of destroyed that. And that's something that it was probably coming anyways. I mean, there's so many things that were coming anyways that we can't do anything about. Like, had, you know, people always say, and a guy the other day wrote, well, any track that relies on casino money to operate, you know, should be closed. You know, one of those stupid things. And it's like, dude, have none. Do you realize that all the tracks would be closed?
We'd have none.
Seriously, like, what would still be open without any money from alternate sources? Because
maybe
remember,
Woodbine.
Remember,
Tampa.
That the competition was coming anyways, and if competition comes and you get a slice of what the competition makes, well, that eases the pain a little bit, and it extends your timeline a little bit. It doesn't mean that, oh well, they would have figured out ways to combat that. That's bullshit. That's not.
They could have. They would have.
Exactly. It's like saying the mom and pa hamburger place could have fended off McDonald's and burgers. They just had to make better burgers, or, you know.
I mean, I'm sure they could carve a niche in a certain area, but to outperform them, no way.
Would racing have adjusted better? Probably, but I think it's a point of maybe we would have done a couple things better. Maybe we would have done this better, but I don't think we would have done so much better that we would still be in business. And that's the point, you know, you try to make, especially the tracks that are located on land that's high value. I mean, does anybody really consider Gulfstream safe? Santa Anita safe? How much do you think those tracks are worth the land values? And I know there's always some kind of caveats about zoning or the city or the county or this, they don't want to do it, blah, 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 blah. You know what usually happens. Money usually wins out. But how much money do you think those properties are valued at? Those are massive properties.
Especially Santa Anita. Look at that view they got.
That's what I mean. These are massive properties. Massive pieces of land in where there's just not any other land available, or just not much available. I mean, how much money can you make as a racetrack? I just think people have been, and this is talking about people in the industry, not people outside of the industry, because it seems like the people outside the industry are far more cognizant of the danger that exists than people in involved. I mean, we had last year at this time, a year ago at this time, Stronach Group people were telling the guys at Golden Gate, everything was cool. Everything was good. Don't worry. Seriously?
No, I remember.
Meanwhile, now we find out they were running a $3 million purse deficit.
It's just ugly. It's really ugly.
Yeah.
And people don't really have the they don't grasp the gravity of the situation. And like you said, the people inside the industry are like, oh, well, they're telling us this. And I don't understand why they just accept that as gospel instead of finding out for themselves.
The sensitivity level of people in this industry is amazing.
Oh, man, it's horrific. Like, it's so dumb.
Someday I'm just going to, like, lose it, and I'm just
going to let off.
There's going to be like 15 people, and I'm just going to rip them. I mean, just rip them. I mean, what would make anyone in this business think that they're above reproach or that they shouldn't be made fun of?
I make fun of myself.
You want to make fun of me? I don't care.
Yeah, I make fun of myself. I put a crying Jordan on my own face. I did that.
You're
actually CJ did it, but it was funny. Yeah. I don't care.
You're fat and bald. Yeah, no shit.
Thanks.
How about if I punch you in the face? Then you'll have a black eye.
And then you only see half of my bald head, right?
It's just like the sensitivity levels that exist are just off the charts.
It's just
and at what point are we going to say, you know what? We can't be nice to people anymore. Like,
well, there's going to be that point. There has
like the Strana Group is a disaster. They are a disaster. They're a disaster. And oh well, you know, they're trying. I don't care. The end result is Maryland is a mess that I don't know how they're going to get out of. Outside of they might get kicked out of Maryland. They're closing a track in San Francisco, which is like the fifth largest metro area in the country. Can't keep that going. The track that they have in Southern California is doing so well. They're cutting purses. And Gulfstream, which has become like a B-plus level track. When it used to be the wintertime was an A-plus level track. But you know what? Horsemen don't even want to run there. And can you blame them? Is it all their fault? No. But they responded to a changing dynamic, a changing environment by putting in a track that most people with good horses don't want to run on. No one asked. They didn't ask anybody.
I'd love to have heard it if anybody was like, yeah, can you guys put in a synthetic track,
please? This isn't Turfway.
Right. It's not freezing cold down
right
there.
Grass racing has gotten more and more important, and a handle on grass racing is I did a study, a couple of them, of Gulfstream purses and handle. Gulfstream turf races and the championship meet were doing 30-35% more than dirt races, and they were doing 35% more than Tapeter races. Tapeter races came in and they handled the same as dirt. They're not handling more. You're replacing turf races with Tapeter races. You're replacing more turf races than you are dirt races. I mean, it's just a mathematical formula. If you have 6 turf races a day, and now you run 2 or 3, well, that means that 2 or 3 of your races are almost guaranteed to handle 30% or more fewer dollars.
Right, and it just goes to show maybe they don't understand the business or what makes them money or what could make them money and keep things going. I mean it's clear somebody somewhere doesn't understand how
the person,
it works.
The person who has the most power in that organization outside of the boss woman, who doesn't really know anything about horses or horse racing or customers or gambling or anything, is a veterinarian, and one who's not even a good veterinarian. That's the hierarchy there. So even if one of the executives, I know a couple of the executives, and I know that actually they're they're sharp guys.
But their hands are tied.
They're not giving it a chance, right? Because you have this bizarre notion of, you know, safety above all, which is sounds great, but I mean, you might have the safest car in the road, but if you don't have any tires, you can't afford gas, you're just gonna sit in the parking lot. Ain't gonna have any horses get hurt at their tracks because they're not gonna be open.
Well, yeah, you know, like the other day I saw somebody say that, you know, the public perception is what's killing the sport, and it's not. It's the business. The business is failing.
The business
the perception isn't helping.
The perception is bad because the business is bad.
Right.
If things were failing, if things were better, if things were thriving, then you have a much better opportunity to take care of the issues that bother people. You can do more for aftercare. You're not having as many off lame, broke down horses because you're catching them beforehand. You're making it where everyone feels like they belong. Everyone feels like they have a chance. Everyone feels like, as whether you're a better, whether you're a trainer, whether you're a trainer, whether you're just a person that works at a track and you're getting paid a fair wage. You're not given, 70 hours worth of work and get paid $12 an hour and then get told, you know, oh, we got to make cuts. Meanwhile, you know, senior executive flies off to Aruba for the weekend, you know? I mean, we just don't exist in that plane at this point.
Well, the people are operating like it, that we are, though.
I don't know. I mean, I want to talk about good things, man. I want to talk about...
Well, yeah, I want to talk about the races. I want to talk about, you know, a bad beat or...
But the races... You know,
something like that. But it's just so... Everything else precedes all this and is bigger that it makes everything worse. You know, it doesn't make it fun. Like, you know, all the nonsense that is going on has a ripple effect on the product.
Yes. No doubt. And that's one of the things that's really, really, I just kind of shake my head in that there's this thought about, oh, well, you know, it'll all work itself out. It's not working itself out. It's getting worse. Like some of the things, oh, CAWs, regardless of your stance on them, if you consider that they're at a 10% handle level, if they were 10% of the national handle, then they wouldn't be a big problem.
No. You hardly notice them.
The tracks would generate some extra revenue. You know, there'd probably be an issue here and there. Once in a while, we'd have a little, you know. But in the end, you could convince your real-life customers that you cared about them and that you're going to give them a fair shake, when all you do is you continue to just pump these money. You're basically funneling money to them. I mean, that's what you're doing with the rebates that they get. I mean, we're talking about huge amounts of money. You're funneling money to them. Well, that's money that's not used for something else. And would they probably squander it? Yes. It's like paying taxes. No one's happy to pay taxes. You want to pay taxes? Oh, it's your civic duty. You'd feel a whole lot better if the government wasn't going to squander 90% of it.
Yeah.
But that's the thing with us here, man. It's like, this is a problem. I don't care what anybody sitting on a panel tells me. It's a problem because everybody I know who bets has a problem with it. And you can tell them they're wrong, but when they say, well, that's fine, I'm wrong, let me bet on football. Let me bet on something else. Then guess what? Are we going to be right when handle gets to be, you know, lower and lower and lower? I mean, we're not even taking into consideration the, you know, inflation, but it's the trends here are poor, and there's nobody that's going out there and saying, this is what we want to do. This is what we're going to do. We're going to have a – can you imagine if Captain Mike Rapoli, if he
– Captain Mike.
Yeah, that's his name. In my view, and I would call him right to his face, I would say, your name is Captain Mike, because he's not the commissioner. There's no such thing as a commissioner. Racing can't have a commissioner. There's no umbrella to cover everyone in racing. What he wants to be, or he's designed himself as, is he's the captain of the sinking ship of racing. That's what racing is, a sinking ship. He wants to be the captain. We'll call him Captain Mike. But if Captain Mike bought a racetrack and said, you know what we were going to do? No CAW money. None. Zero.
That would automatically put him ahead of 98% of the tracks.
I'm telling you. It would be – remember I used to say about Jeff Gurrell that I didn't always agree with everything he does, and I think he whines a lot for a guy that's worth $850 million. You know, he really doesn't need to whine as much as he does. But he has the right idea about trying to clean his track up. Mm. And I know that there's people who will say, well, you know, he lets this guy run. There's always going to be –
gripes,
gray areas,
and yeah, gripes, and right? People like don't like other people, and they're like, oh, right. You know,
so but
that petty nonsense.
It's the idea that we can require people to pass a certain test in order to participate. To me, that would be great marketing. Now, you're always going to have the far extreme people way out to the right or to the left that are going to make every single person who runs a horse who runs a little better or runs a little worse, oh, well, you know, that they're fixing it. I mean, I saw a guy the other day griping about a takedown, about a horse supposed to be taken. It would have been the greatest miscarriage of justice in the world to take this horse down. The horse really... He didn't do much, and the horse, who kind of steadied, backed up through the field, and at the time wasn't really going anywhere anyways. And of course, you know, six guys jumping, and then they just wanted to bash, you know, the track, because some people are just bitter and they just want to be negative.
Mm.
But it would be one of the easiest ways to market your track, saying, hey, we're not letting... I don't care if Marcus Vitale, if he brings John Roberts, the Supreme Court, and the whole Supreme Court to the stable gate, he ain't getting in. He ain't getting in. If we have to take a baseball bat to him, we'll do it, and we'll fight it out in court after that. And then you tell the bettors, listen, we're not taking CAW money. We don't care. We're not taking it. And we're going to shoot for lower takeout rates than everyone else. And hey, you know what? We need you. We need you to bet on our product. But even so, you know what? The content managers, they would all freak out, and they would try to cut you out. It's all the Stronic tracks and all the ones that are signed up with them, and all the they would all be bitching and moaning and complaining.
Well, that's the thing that I do like about what he does is he makes decisions. I mean, they may not always be the best decisions, but at least he's willing to stand by them and kind of see it through. I find that there's a lot of indecision in the industry, at least on the, you know, thoroughbred side, where they might lean a certain way and kind of go and then pull back and then not do what they need to do in order to you know, kind of better things. And in other cases, they just blatantly ignore or try to ignore the issue, acting as if it'll go away on its own, which isn't good either. But somebody's got to make a decision somewhere. This limbo that we're in right now, where, you know, there's clearly an issue or issues that need decisions to be made about them. Until people start making those decisions, we're going to stay in this realm and get worse. And it all, and it seems like all it's going to take is one track to do it, And once they do it, the others will copycat because they'll be like, oh, that works, so we're going to do it too. And get that kind of momentum. But it's just unfortunate that there's nobody out there that'll take the lead on it in order to kind of, you know, Captain Mike this thing.
Right. No, I mean, listen, you got to fight.
Right. It's, well, how bad do you want it? You know, it's all about desire at this point, I think.
You know, that's the thing is this has to be a fight. This is not going to be everybody. Oh, we're all going to sacrifice because it's like, what are you going to sacrifice?
Right.
Nobody willingly sacrifices anything worthwhile. Oh, well, I'm so-and-so and I have 100 horses in training, so I'm going to send 4 to, I don't know, Brian Lynch because he's only got 40. I mean, that'll be what happens. We'll get guys who are good trainers, who are solid trainers, who, you know, getting a couple more horses. That's not the issue. The issue is that, I mean, I don't even want to talk about it. I'm just sick of talking.
It's right. It's hard not to, though, because every time or every weekend, these issues come up in some way, shape, or form. Every time you play the races, there's an issue. Whether it's horses dropping odds, whether it's, you know, a steady stream of $3.20 winners. Oh, yeah.
No, I know.
Play that music. But, you know, it's hard to overlook when it's in your face all the time.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm just sick of talking about it, to be honest.
I'm sick of it too, but shit, man. It's like, you know, I don't see anybody else or hear anybody else talking about it.
Well, a lot of people just don't know. They don't get it, and they just want to believe. They want to believe what they're told. They want to believe that, oh, they're doing this and they're going to try to do this. And then there's other people that wouldn't matter what you told them. They weren't going to believe it anyways. There's a lot of people that don't believe anything that happens in this business. And you know what?
They're probably closer to being right than anybody else.
Yeah, I can't criticize anyone for that because truthfully, like, the amount of transparency is so, you know, it's a murky situation.
You know, that's a little counterintuitive. The transparency is murky.
Yeah, transparency is murky. Yeah. All I know is the Arizona Wildcats are number 1 in the nation in basketball. And they're number 14 in football.
Yeah, great sports here so far, man.
The Dolphins are 10-3. Well, I shouldn't say that. They're 9-3.
9-3.
They play tonight. And the Knicks are, you know, the Knicks.
The Tibbs doubt.
I cannot get excited about the Knicks, man. I just.
No, because as long as Tibbs is the head guy, they're going to have problems. You know, they'll have flashes where they play well and look really good, but. You know that she was going to fall off because Tibbs is going to get in his own way.
I feel like racing. There's like you said, man, they're maxed out. Like last year that's what they can do. That's as much as they can do.
Well, it's like that thing we saw earlier with Kenny Smith where he's saying that they don't have the best player on the floor hardly ever.
Right.
You know, they got a bunch of kind of second tier type.
They have a bunch of good players.
Yeah, they have really good second tier kind of players.
That'll get you to a certain point. And right. That's all it'll do.
Almost like the Bucks back in the 80s and 90s. Remember they used to always make the playoffs, be out in the
all
first round?
All pressy.
Yep. Those years, Terry Cummings.
Yeah. They're always good, but not good enough.
Right. And they used to make the playoffs, you know, lose in the first round, and everybody was happy.
Right.
But that's not good enough, man.
I know they have a lot of picks. They have a lot of assets, this, that, and the other thing. But like you said, man, Tibbs is a problem. He's very rigid, and he just is never – I mean, when you look at the deal with Miami, right, they played Miami.
Yeah.
In the second round last year, the playoffs.
Mm.
It wasn't as though Miami's player for player was so much better than them.
They really aren't much. I mean, Butler probably is the only one that's slightly better.
Right, who was hurt.
Right.
And I mean, he missed a game or two. And then Adebayo, obviously, was he's better than that Randall.
Yeah, but he's better than the big guy. Yeah.
Certainly, certainly better defensively. But, I mean, the rest of the players, they're not really
they're pretty even.
Better.
Yeah, but they're pretty even.
They got outcoached so badly because everybody, Miami knew it was coming all the time.
I know the other coaches in the league is like, yo, I know exactly what Tibbs is going to do to us, man. He does it every year. They like own him. Unless, obviously there's the X factor where, one player could just go off and you really can't have an answer for that at times. That happens in the NBA a lot.
They're not a bad team.
They're on the verge. They just need to get rid of the coach.
And the way he coaches, like there's a lot of stories and that you get to this time of the year where you're a long, long ways from the playoffs and season's already started. It's been going on a couple months. They got, the in-season tournament's over. So there's just kind of a lull. So people start talking trades and moves. And the problem with the Knicks is that the system he has to have a center on the floor at all times. That limits who you can go after. Now, you got a guy like Pascal Siakam is available from Toronto, supposedly, right? He's in his last year of his contract. And, I mean, he lost Fred VanVleet last year for nothing.
Absolutely.
Trading
zero.
At the deadline. They got nothing for him. So you got to imagine a team that's really not going anywhere would be trying to trade this player who's been an all-NBA type player who plays both sides of the court. I mean, yeah, he's going to be expensive. And is he a superstar? No. But he's a star-level player who can help you in a lot of different ways. And he would fit great on the Knicks, except he can't play with Julius Randle. There's no way those two guys are going to mesh. So he's not a guy you can go out and get. I mean, and that's the thing, is that because you have a point guard, and you have a guy like Randall who's very ball dominant, and you have to have a center on the court, you get limited as to what type of players you could acquire. That's what I mean. It's like, that's the Thibs part, because you could give Eric Spoelstra any five guys, and he's going to come up with a system that works for them.
Look at what they've done the last couple of years. I mean, they've put together, a squad that nobody thought of or was thinking about having.
The player development.
Right. And they got Caleb Martin, who, he started off the year.
Giveaway.
He was hurt, but I mean, geez, that kid's awfully good.
They were giving him away. Duncan Robinson was you could have signed him off the streets. We could have sent him to the Going of Circles podcast fucking AAU team. Gabe Vincent, who's the guy that plays like for Cleveland now that played for DePaul? Him. I mean,
that guy.
Like, and this is the argument I always have with Saratoga Dan about Obi Toppin. Obi Toppin is a talented guy, but he has a certain specific skill
right,
in that.
Right.
And you have to put him in a position to use that, where he can use his athleticism and his speed. The guy put him in a corner. I mean, that's the one spot on the court where being athletic doesn't help. The corner. I mean, Cam Reddish is Cam Reddish. He is who he is. But he's a pretty good defensive player, and he's a talented guy, but he's just never got, his head straight. Well, what's Thibs do? He starts him a couple games. He plays pretty well. Then he takes him out, and he doesn't play him. He won't play him at all. They have to give away a first-round pick to get rid of him. after giving up a first round pick to get him. And that's not like, these aren't star players who are going to be, you know, difference makers, but they were assets.
Well, that's the thing my dad used to always tell me, because my dad, he coached for a little while, and he used to always say the best coaches always put their players in the positions to succeed, whether it's offensively or defensively. You have to really understand what you're doing. It's not a dictatorship where you can just say, all right, this is what we're going to do. No, you have to adjust to your player's strengths and weaknesses. He doesn't do that very well, Tibbs. He never has. That's why it's crazy to me that he keeps getting jobs.
No, it's just, he is a guy you want to bring in to change your culture, because I'll give the guy this. He is obviously,
I'll get people to play defense.
He's an extremely hard worker. I mean, he's a guy that's going to live and die doing this job. That's all he cares absolutely about. So you bring him in, and he can make, he can clean up the mess. But after that, he is limited.
Right. He's the guy before the guy.
Teams can only play as hard. Like his teams, and this has been, I mean, this is kind of an odd juxtaposition in that you're criticizing him because his teams play so hard in a regular season. But they play super hard in a regular season. It's an 82-game season. Other teams don't. They rest guys. They take nights off. They have, you know, issues. They lose a couple games here and there because in the end, the playoffs are what matters. And, you know, it like I said, it's a long season. It's 82 games. And you don't want your guys to be burned out by the time you get to the playoffs. And a lot of times
they'll
win 4 or 5 extra games a year because he played all the starters every game and because they play so hard. But once you get to the playoffs, everybody plays hard. So any advantage perceived advantage is gone and becomes an X's and O's, especially when there's, you know, a lot of times there's at least a day between, sometimes 2 days between, sometimes 3 days between.
Right. There's prep time. They got the film. They come up with schemes. I mean, I've seen it myself personally.
You're playing the same team.
Right.
And you're getting 2 or 3 days to, you don't, it's not like during the season when every single game you're playing a game and then you're playing a different team. Then you're playing a different team in a different city and a different team and a different team. And you can only, you know, focus so much because you're playing this series of games. Well, now,
well, even the scouting reports during the season are way more limited than they are.
Well, like, sure, because you know, now you have a 2.5 month, or excuse me, 2.5 week series against the team
instead of 3 days prior.
It's the whole team. It's the whole. That's all you're doing is you're looking at that team, and it just is. You know. Anyways, I'm sure no one feels sorry for me. And you shouldn't, because, you know, we're used to this.
How about the Magic, though?
The Magic are good.
Playing well. I mean, they're not there yet, but they're close.
The Magic are good. The Magic, the team that needs to make a trade for, like, a veteran.
For a vet, yeah.
Yeah, a guy that's been through good the playoffs.
One. Yeah.
You know, that can keep everybody
But focused. The problem is what position is that person? You know, what would they look for?
On who becomes available. You know, yeah, I mean, they got plenty of money.
Oh, they certainly do. They just need a guy. I mean, they're loaded with young talent. They just need that glue.
Oh, they're a good team, man. They take a while, but they're on the way up. I feel bad for my guy Jay, man. Pistons are a mess.
Oof. Yeah, Killian Hayes trapped in limbo.
Class handicapper, you were wrong. Jordan Poole ain't winning the Wizards any games, my friend.
You see Garnett go crazy about him. He said we don't need guys in the league like this.
It's Tank Central, man. The only team they beat is Detroit. They haven't won a game in a month, except they beat Detroit. Even they couldn't out-Detroit. You know, the funny thing about Detroit is they have some guys who can play on that team. I mean, they have some good players. They're just a complete mess.
Mess. It's ugly.
Nobody seems like they're in charge. I'm sure everyone who actually listens for horse racing is like has no idea what we're talking about and probably doesn't care. But But anyways. Well, you got anything else, man? Because I'm kind of...
No, I don't. I mean, the racing was kind of so-so this weekend. And
oh, I want to shout out to my guy, Jerry Bruno. Free like a girl, won another race.
Nice.
At the Louisiana Bred Fillies. Man,
she's tough.
She's had some career.
Yeah.
Some career. So. Yeah. Just keep on keeping on. She's by L. Deal.
Huh. Go figure.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I haven't talked to him recently. I don't know if his plans are to retire her. Or if he's going to keep running her, but I mean, all she does is win.
Win W's everywhere.
Tough. I think she's got like 15 wins. Something crazy like that.
Yeah, that's unheard of in 2023, bro.
Yeah.
She says some horses don't even make 15 starts, and they don't get 15 wins.
No doubt. Well, New York's coming up on their break soon.
Right, next week.
Yeah, so we'll be kind of quiet there.
Santa Anita comes back day after Christmas, and Los Al's this week, right? Ends this week, or no? There's one more week.
Los Al
9 days, so
it starts and it ends.
There's only 3 days, right? It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 3 weekends. So yeah, so. The weekend before Christmas? They're not running on Christmas Eve, are they?
No, they do not run on Christmas Eve. Well, the 26th is always the Santa Anita traditional opening, so.
So they only run 2 days then that week, right? Then the 22nd and 23rd?
I have no idea.
I have no clue. I know it was like 9 days or something like that.
I don't know. But.
Man, that's one track I just can't solve.
Oh, Los Al.
Thoroughbreds. The quarter horses I got, we do well there. But the thoroughbreds, I just can't.
Sometimes when Les Onaka was still working for TVG,
man, I would just money.
I would just
bet what he said.
Whatever Les said, I would bet.
Yeah. Jose Contreras.
Explain about some of the.
My man Los Ponies is getting there, man. He's close to Les Onaka style.
How do we say this? Some of the handicapping that's done is so poor. But Les Onaka, man, that guy was money.
Yeah, I think it's the opinions versus the betting acumen kind of thing. Yeah.
But anyways. Yeah, the Gulfstream's going, but it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of excitement about it. The fairgrounds has been all right, I guess. And
well, my hope is that
Oaklawn has been okay.
The Gulfstream meet picks up after the new year. That's what my hope is. Whether it does or not is another story, but
we'll see. Yeah, Tampa's been okay, I guess, right?
Tampa's always good, man. And the reason why is because there's always, usually on a card, 2 or 3 chaotic races where it's just like almost inscrutable that breaks everybody in pick 4s and 5s and stuff like that. And that, and if you can pinpoint those races, you'll always do well there. But it's hard, man. I mean, because some races it looks like, a nice favorite in the right spot, doing everything they're supposed to win that race, and they still lose to like a 20-to-1 shot that flies home or something wild happens. But, that's why I enjoy kind of playing Tampa, because they have – it's just some chaos that goes on all the time. It's never really like a straight day where, you'll see a steady stream of favorites.
Right, exactly.
The product is good. I mean, despite the lower level, the product is really up there as far as, what you see and the betting.
Well, kind of a short show tonight, but it's the way it goes.
Yeah, you know, we have to adapt. You know, we can't just do the same thing over and over again. Take note, industry.
Right. Yeah, shorten it up. All right, well.
Go Dolphins.
That's right.
Go Magic. They're playing right now, too.
There we go. All right. Sounds good. We'll talk to you guys next week. Hey everyone, Barry and I want to thank you for listening to the Big Monday Show, and for those that also read the Going in Circles Digest, again, thank you for your support and for listening to our show, reading our stuff. In that same vein, we want to announce that we are now part of a horse racing centric website. It's called racinghub.com, RCNGHUB.com. It's brand new. We're just slow rolling it out. It's going to be a spot where you can go for information, for takes, for analysis, for opinions. And they're going to come from us, of course, and others that we feel have unbiased opinions, that aren't trying to sell you something, that understand racing and the issues, and you're going to get a view that is not available in that many other places. We have quite a few people lined up to join us. Again, we're rolling it out slow. We're not trying to be anyone else. We are ourselves. This is our site. This is what we're doing. We have other partners that are involved as well, but we want people to check this out and make suggestions. Tell us what you want to see. Tell us what you think is missing in horse racing media. We're going to do handicapping. We're going to do coverage of races. We're going to do a lot of different stuff. But we want to hear from you because you guys are the listeners. So check it out. RCNGHUB.com, racinghub.com.